This is the Popmatic Podcast for March 30th, 2016. Woo! College!
Yeah!
Yay,
yeah.
Team!
Go!
Kickstand!
Popmatic Podcast, where Jeremy can giggle the whole way through the show. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Pledge Mike.
Jeremy.
And...
Sarah.
Sarah.
Sarah's back.
Sarah's here today.
It's homecoming.
Pledge Mike. Homecoming. These are good, guys.
It's like we worked all night on them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Bill has magically transformed into Sarah again.
Woohoo. It was kind of hard to do, but you know.
If you do it too many times,
yeah.
Or someone...
Classic
you'll get anime
Ranma one half or whatever.
I magically lost my accent,
he
too.
He got a splash of water, became Sarah. He gets splashed with colder water, becomes a panda.
Did you keep your encyclopedic knowledge of 70s cinema?
Oh, there's the quiz later.
Yeah. Replaced it with baseball.
All right. Speaking of sports, March Madness is upon us.
Woo-hoo.
College.
Go team. MTSU.
College sports ball hysteria is at maximum peak. Mm-hmm. And we're nerds, so we're going to de-emphasize the balls and talk about the college.
Wow. Also, the Cats lost, so who cares?
And who'd they lose to, by the way?
I don't know.
Indiana.
Oh, yep.
That's why.
Garbage!
That's why it's cool. That's why.
Yeah. Curse you, Bobby Knight!
No, we curse Bobby Knight, too. It's okay.
I'm going to throw my chair.
So I just said we weren't going to talk about basketball.
But it happened.
So on this show...
I'm from Indiana. It's a rule.
I understand.
I wrote that.
I'm from Kentucky.
On this show, wall-to-wall academia, or binge drinking, as the case may be.
Kickstand!
That's right, college. Sarah.
Yes. Well, let's see. College, you say? I'm so happy to be joining the podcast crew again, especially for my favorite time of the year, March Madness, jazz hands.
Ooh. Ooh.
But for our listeners, I'd like to report that since my last appearance, I have changed apartments. That's right, you can now find me in Metro Archives on the third floor of the downtown library. Let me dust off the dust on my paper here from all the archives I've been going through. One of the many cool things I've learned in my month there is about a women's college that existed where the Federal Building currently sits on Broadway. For the local Nashville history buffs, Vaux Hall was the name of the famous building on Broadway and also the street that is now known as 9th Avenue South. Not as fancy, but whatever. The name of the school was the Nashville College for Young Ladies. Very fancy. Its lifespan was somewhat short, yet still successful, having opened in 1880 by Reverend George W.F. Price and closing after Price's death in 1899. Never heard of it? Don't worry, it was new to me too, and I will try not to bore you with this because it is interesting. The establishment of women's colleges and seminaries was popular during the 19th century. To decipher the two, seminaries were comparable to finishing schools because they primarily were created with the intention of educating women about their future roles as wives and mothers. Yes. While colleges provided women with an education that prepared them as future community leaders, and this was closely equivalent with a man's education at the time. Well, I dug around through this collection and found some interesting things. For instance, I found that through its curriculum and facilities, it was a leading southern school for the advanced education of women. The school's founding was also supported by the Methodists of Nashville, so it was a first of its kind as a metropolitan school of southern Methodism. Woohoo! It was also affiliated with Vanderbilt, and with this partnership, students had the privilege of attending lectures each year from Vanderbilt professors. And another piece of cool Nashville history, a few of these lectures were given at the Union Gospel Tabernacle, a.k.a. the original name of the Ryman.
Ooh.
Yeah, around the time that it was open, they got to check it out.
I'm so going to win Jeopardy now.
There you go. All right, well, the most intriguing and telling artifacts of the collection that I found were these school yearbooks, and they were titled The Talisman.
Hey, that's the name of my college alma mater's yearbook.
Funny coincidence there.
Weird.
Well, we have two of the last yearbooks of the school for the years 1897 and 1899. School closed in 1899, so we've got the very last. They were shown to me by my coworker Leanne after she recently scanned the entire 1899 yearbook to post to the library website. And so that should be up coming soon, so be sure to check out the archives digital collection under local history on the website. The 1899 yearbook includes a picture of the old Vauxhall building of the school, which I found out are apparently hard to come by, and a full list of the subjects and levels offered. Because it was a girls' school, guess what they had? That's right, a domestic department. Can't escape that during this time period, but oh well. And I don't know if this next one was a club or just a superlatives page, but the book also includes a photo and list of ladies that were described as demoralizing irregulars. Yeah, thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's what I was hanging out with.
Money girls.
Please bookmark that for Brian.
Ironically enough, this photo includes women eating fruit. Did I mention this school was religiously affiliated? But because this is...
Oh, no apples allowed.
Well, you know, in Leviticus... In Leviticus,
you don't eat in public is the issue. It's not the appleness, it's the...
Oh, I thought...
The really? That too? I mean, I knew about, like,
ladies
ankles and stuff,
ladies
but...
Ladies do not eat in public.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. I thought it was like...
Shout out Rachel Ray.
Remember, supposed to have
school.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. Okay. Wow. Because this is March Madness, though, I wanted to be sure and point out that they had a basketball team and that it was spelt basketball into two words. I don't really know why, but...
Old school.
Yeah.
Gee.
Evidently, this was a favorite activity of their physical culture, commonly known as phys ed. They just made it sound more philosophical, I guess. There were two teams, the Hornets and the Bumblebees, and according to their descriptions, they played the game like their namesakes. Kind of sad we don't have footage of that, because it sounds entertaining. Of course, there's still plenty to learn about the college, but this is the part that I invite you to visit us in archives, and I'd be more than happy to show you more of the collection. And look for my next blog post on Off the Shelf, where I will discuss the school more in depth and provide a few pictures. So, Amanda.
This was just a teaser?
A teaser. Well, you should have seen how long
trailer
I wrote about this.
It's a cross-platform.
It could be a teaser.
Promotion.
Okay, yeah, it's a teaser. Yeah. Teaser to the yearbook.
That's called synergistic marketing.
Exactly.
It's brilliant.
Because we are smart here.
That's right.
Next.
Okay. So, I come from a small town. I may have mentioned that.
I come from a small town.
A small rural town at that.
In Indiana, you say?
In Indiana, I say.
Oh, man. There's nothing but small towns up there.
Are you going to die in a small town?
he's not my mascot. He also came from a small town in Indiana, but, you know.
One of which he does not return to.
I married a model in a small town.
Okay, so anyway.
Stop. Pause
while Mike sings John Mellencamp.
Well, you know, I've changed my name from Pledge Mike to Cougar.
To Cougar Mike.
He dropped the cougar. Did you pick it up?
Mikey Cougar. Yeah.
So he dropped it, so you picked it?
Yeah, I found it on the road one day.
Okay, so in lots of literary novels, small towns seem to be idyllic and peaceful and quaint, and let me tell you, you can have it. It is not for me. Basically, I went to school on the same square mile of ground with the same people from K through 12. It's not quite a one-room schoolhouse, but you can basically walk from kindergarten to high school and never go outside.
I
suppose is good on a rainy day, but as soon as I graduated from my high school class of exactly 100 people, I headed to Indiana University, who just beat Jeremy's wonderful team.
It's not my team. I claim no affiliation.
Because they lost. Which is one of, if not the biggest university in the state, at roughly 45,000 students. And that was better. And I think that's why I identified with the main character, Charlotte Simmons, in Tom Wolfe's novel called I Am Charlotte Simmons. Charlotte is from a small town, too, and because of good grades and the fact that her town is fairly poor, she receives a full-ride scholarship to fictional DuPont University, which Wolfe described as being Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, Duke, and a few other places all rolled into one. Now, Charlotte was a little bit more of a fish out of water than I was, and she gets herself into some trouble, including being dumped after a one-night drunken hookup with Mr. Big Man on campus.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, she gets her head on straight before things completely spiral out of control. Now, I have had several patrons randomly tell me that I should read Tom Wolfe, especially naming A Man in Full or Bonfire of Vanities, but I had never actually pulled the trigger on any of his because I didn't really have a good idea what they were about, and they're long. So then in 2004, when Charlotte Simmons came out, I jumped on it because I'm supposed to read Tom Wolfe. And I will admit, Charlotte Simmons is also long. It clocks in at about 752 pages. But it was about a girl in college, so I was like, okay, I can read this. And I remember enjoying the book. I actually think I was reading it at the same time that President Bush was, for some reason. I don't know why that sticks in my head. But there were a couple sections where it got a little bit boggy, but if you persevere, you will make it through the end, like I did. Now, this is the only book of Wolfe's that I have read, but I really should go back and read the others that I mentioned. I've talked about Theodore Dreiser on the podcast before, and Wolfe kind of reminds me a little bit of his style. Both writers are very journalistic, and that seems to be something that I like. So if you've been meaning to read Tom Wolfe, but you're scared, I would suggest I Am Charlotte Simmons, and then you can see which aspects of yourself you can find in the main character.
So this isn't a burn or
I don't think that'll be cut later.
I'm coming in diplomatic. So,
okay. You mean you don't want to bring
this,
her
this
down?
This isn't like your normal garbage, is it, Amanda?
There's no sex and weather. If
this is the wrong stuff.
A lot of people think that isn't his best book.
I've heard that too.
And I haven't read it.
Yeah, and I haven't read anything else, so I can't compare. But I have heard that he did kind of get a little bit panned by critics, but I liked it.
What is his most popular book?
Bonfire of Vanities is his most notable.
Yeah, he did the right stuff.
And the Electric
Kool-Aid. That's Kool-Aid. Yeah.
He was a leading figure of the new journalism movement.
Mm-hmm. Known for wearing white suits.
White suits, yeah.
After Labor Day?
All the time.
Isn't it always after Labor Day?
Yeah.
Unless it is Labor Day.
White suits all the time?
I've always thought. Just never understood that.
You can't, it's Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Yeah.
And you don't eat fruit in public. Next week, Miss Manners.
You eat cantaloupe, and you can't eat cantaloupe.
Wow.
I've just stopped listening to Mike. Cause
cantaloupe?
You've never heard him say that before?
Wow. Wow.
Makes perfect sense.
What a tangent ring you went on.
No.
I don't know who's next. I'm sorry.
Now we're going bananas.
Jeremy's going to go next to cleanse my palate of the really bad tangerine. Pun? Was that a pun?
Tangerine.
I don't know what that was.
That was a plum joke.
Wow. Can we just stop it and move on?
I'm going to step outside for a minute. I'll be right back.
Can we just stop it?
It's totally apparent that you need to go.
Apparent?
I see. Yes, yes.
Okay. I have no...
you have no user to mic.
I don't have
any. Where are you going to go?
See why I stopped listening?
Everybody, get pineapple in there.
I was trying to find one.
No, it just feels forced.
I have no soft or hard introduction to my to my bit, so I'm just gonna peel back the peel and see what is beneath. Ghost World is either the best comic book movie ever made, or it's locked in a three-way tie with American Splendor and Lady Snowblood. Director and co-writer Terry Zwigoff and writer-artist Daniel Clowes brought Clowes' comic book to the screen without the benefit of Doritos bags and fast food promotions, and its success both as an adaptation and as a film is hard to beat unless you're American Splendor or Lady Snowblood. The pair collaborated again on 2006's Art School Confidential, which is the subject of my piece for today.
Did they go to college in Ghost World? I'm confused.
Well, they graduate high school in Ghost World. And then there's are you going to go to college or are you going to work at a coffee place? Art School Confidential.
Call for Steve Buscemi.
Yeah. Art School Confidential was based on a 4-page comic from Clowes' 8-Ball, which was sort of his comic book. Clowes is credited as the sole screenwriter for Art School Confidential, and it's a decidedly darker than its predecessor. But given the brevity of its source material, calling it an adaptation is kind of generous. So this film is an extrapolation of the original story, which itself was loosely based on Clowes' experiences at the Pratt Institute in Chicago. So you can read the original Art School Confidential story in the Art School Confidential screenplay book, which is by Daniel Clowes. It's a biting satire of the very idea of art school, in which a Clowes stand-in attends art school as an undercover operative to, quote, learn firsthand the shocking truth about the biggest scam in history. The whole story is sort of told like a trailer for a 50s exploitation film or something. Has been famous artist who couldn't teach a dog to bark and all this sort of stuff. It's a short, bitter rant about how art schools morphed from institutions which prepared skilled artists for the realities of making a living off their work to support groups for rich kids who have, quote, potential. And this obviously is based on his personal experience. It's hilarious and awful. And if you've been to art school or like me or friends with lots of people who went to art school, it feels pretty spot on. There's a guy who, you know, gets out of – it says he sort of went to school only to chase – ladies. And he gets up in the morning and says, like, oh, I don't have my assignment done. I could hand in my toothbrush as a conceptual statement about consumerism. There's a joke which ended up in the Ghost World movie with a tampon and a teacup. And it feels like perilously close to reality to me. So the movie takes the characters from the comic, and they're all kind of like tropes, like the washed-up famous artist who's the teacher, the rich housewife who sort of enjoys painting and then has delusions of grandeur, like a documentarian filmmaker who sort of puts himself in his films. And they put them all in class with a character named Jerome, played by Max Minghella, who's a lonely illustrator who's in pursuit of romance as much as he is a degree. And he finds this romance in Audrey, played by Sophia Miles, who is an art model. And then after a zany mix-up, Jerome is believed to be a local serial killer, and he parlays this accidental infamy into artistic success. It's pretty funny, but it's pretty bleak. But it's definitely worth checking out. And if this book and film tickle your fancy, you should be sure to check out Clo's new book, Patience, which is now available at the library. And apparently it's a cosmic time warp death trip to the primordial infinite of everlasting love.
Wow.
Mike?
I'm also partial to Scott Pilgrim versus the World as a comic book movie.
No.
I wasn't a fan of that movie. Don't bring me down.
Ah.
I liked the idea, but I didn't think the movie was all that great.
Sorry, man.
Did me. Speaking of college, the day before we recorded this, I was up very late at Vanderbilt's Dyer Observatory, ostensibly to see a silent film presented by the Bell Corps, but in actuality, to play with their telescopes. Oh, boy. So on the one hand, I got to see Jupiter and the moon. It was great. And there were food
Jupiter
trucks.
In the moon?
Yes. And
right in there.
I saw some of the moons of Jupiter, even. Ooh. And there were food trucks, and it was great. I had a great time. Also, on the other hand, the movie's kind of meh. I only got 4 hours of sleep, so I'm skipping the usual intro. Yada, yada, Felix, yada, yada, personal history, yada, 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 yada. So today I'm going to talk about a fantasy novel called The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. It begins with a traveling writer named The Chronicler, taking refuge at an inn in the middle of a nowhere town called Noir and the magical world of Tamarant. Chronicler becomes suspicious of the innkeeper and his assistant and eventually deduces that they're actually the legendary hero Kvothe and his elven friend Bast. He asks to record Kvothe's life story and is refused, but after an encounter with spider monsters, Kvothe changes his mind and lays out a quote that is so good that they put on the back cover. I have stolen princesses back from sleepy barrow kings. I have burned down the town of Trebon. I have spent the night with Falurian and left with both my sanity and my life. I was expelled from the university at a younger age than most people are even allowed in. I tread paths by moonlight that others fear to speak of during the day. I have talked to gods, loved women, and written songs that make the minstrels weep. You may have heard of me. That was pretty cool. Kvothe grew up the child of actors, but when he was very young, he met a traveling mage who taught the boy the basic rudiments of magic. But soon afterwards, the entire troop, including Kvothe's parents, are slaughtered by 7 mythical beings called the Chandrian. While Kvothe, his name is just a pain to say, was out gathering herbs. He vows to do whatever it takes to get revenge on the Chandrian. He wanders the city of Tarbion as a beggar and eventually saves up enough money to attend the university, which is what it's called. They don't go like, the college of what?
Create a whole world. The university of what?
The university. Yes.
We're now free city right there, and we're done.
Yeah, there's like one college.
Attended the university.
There's one college on Earth, and it's called the university. Art, whatever it's called, Tamarant, a college of wizards. So, as a librarian and book nerd, I particularly loved that Kavoth spends most of his time in the archives of the university amongst the books, making friends with the librarians there. There's even sections that correspond to actual libraries, like what we would call special collections. They're called the stacks. There's an acquisitions office, and there's even something called the cataloger's mew. I have a cat. Does that count? Oh, boy. Mew, mew. I don't know what it is, but I want to know what it is. Anyway, in addition to trying to research the Chandrian, Kavoth meets a cute girl and makes enemies with the preppy rich kid. I also like that despite the badass quote from earlier, young Kavoth does not effortlessly go through life mowing down foes. He actually has problems and fails at times and is basically like a kid, you know, trying to, you know, snot-nosed kid trying to make his way in the world. I also liked that, much like a H.P. Lovecraft hero, he's eager to go to a college known for its rare magic books to do research into unspeakable horrors before confronting them. Good stuff. So, Name of the Wind. I liked it. It's so good that I've even been hesitant to read the sequel. And I read that my memories of the first one maybe are too good. On those kind of things. What you got, Brian?
Well, it's funny. I thought today that I read the title of what you're going to talk about today, and I thought it was The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. Which is funny. That's like a total, like...
I've got that confused, too, because I've read both of them, and it's is it the one about the magic college or the one about, like, the book universe thing?
I wondered how you're going to spin it to college, because The Shadow of the Wind is all about books. It's like a love letter to books.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well, I bet Mike probably really liked that novel.
I did.
Yeah.
It was cool.
But I was like, and you were like, oh, Patrick Rothfuss. Oh, yeah, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, see.
So what I'm going to talk about today might be controversial. I'm going to say something taboo. Mm-hmm. Not everyone should go to college.
Blasphemy.
Sometimes people have a destiny or a fate that's different than college. Like the main character in the movie that I'm going to tell you about. And besides, I don't remember college at all. And I'm very immature for my age.
Keg stand.
I'm very immature for my age. So if we're going to do an episode about college, I have to talk about high school. All right, all right, all right. So the movie I'm going to speak about today is...
Twister.
Donnie Darko.
Oh.
Okay, start the...
How are we supposed to know that? You know, it sounds like you dropped, like, bunnies an airplane landing on a house.
I thought the hint was, all right, all right, all right.
Yeah, and I thought that was Daisy Confused.
That's where I was going to.
I thought you guys were going to shout Daisy Confused.
Yeah.
Okay, I
blanked on the title. I was going to say, like,
pitch,
Everybody Wants Some, his latest spiritual successor to...
Man, go to college.
Thought it was a softball pitch. All right. Linklater does have a new movie about...
I just said it.
Texas jerks in college in the 80s. I don't know why anyone would want to see that movie. But okay.
That's the name of it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but I'm going to talk about Donnie Darko. Stars a young Jake Gyllenhaal. Stars as the titular Donnie. He's a bright kid, but he stops caring about school. His family is afraid he's beginning to have mental health problems. This only gets worse when his sister, played by Gyllenhaal's real-life sister, Maggie, gets accepted to Harvard. Whoa, that's a college you've heard of. And a jet engine lands on their house. The family wants to be happy for Elizabeth, but it seems like Donnie's mind is coming apart. He's having... hallucinations, and he suffers from blackout and lost time. I have no idea how that feels. This causes Donnie to feel like Tupac and not give a... He starts to question everything, even the nature of time and space. Maybe his hallucinations aren't just hallucinations. Maybe Helena Sparrow, the spinster lady that walks back and forth to her mailbox all day, is just caught in a time loop. Duh. But probably. Donnie goes to a Catholic school where the nature of time and reality is decidedly not in question. This causes even more conflict. But like any good autodidact that doesn't go to college, Donnie takes it upon himself to learn about the nature of time and space. Things come to a head when Donnie and his girlfriend break into Ms. Sparrow's house on Halloween night. Yeah, that's a really good high school idea that your adolescent brain makes. Indeed, the line between the living and the dead is thinner on All Hallows' Eve. But that's all the more I can tell you without force-feeding you the most spoiled spoilers of all time. If you need a blurb, it's as if Philip K. Dick wrote Dead Poets Society. Okay. It's witty, it's touching, it's creepy, it'll put a wrinkle on your brain. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a teen movie, but a great one.
Stay away from Patrick Swayze.
I, I, the cast is great, too. Patrick Swayze is in it, Noah Wiley, Drew Barrymore, a young Jenna Malone, Jake Gyllenhaal before he was famous. Okay. I saw it years after it came out when I was an adult, and I still liked it. One thing that would have made it a little better is if Donnie was a girl instead of a boy. We don't need another movie about boy adolescence.
We all mean like the sequel?
S-Darko?
Yeah, D-Darko or something?
S or something.
Yeah, S-Darko.
S-Darko for his sister Samantha, yeah. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen that one. Is it good?
I heard it's awful.
I saw it, but I don't remember it.
That's how good it was. Just like my college years.
I should have called it Donna Darko. Duh. Jeez.
Donnie Darko, but like take off the E.
Yeah.
She was established in the first movie. She was already there, Samantha.
Oh.
So
well, she named her Donna.
The other great thing about the movie is the soundtrack. It features some amazing recontextualized 80s hits that puts Wes Anderson to shame. Never Tear Us Apart by INXS, Head Over Heels by Tears for Fears. But the best of all, The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen, which perfectly captures the mood of the movie, and the lyrics are thematically relevant to the plot. So soon you'll take me up in your arms, too late to beg you, or cancel it though I know it must be. So we have Donnie Darko on DVD and all those various hits in various formats. Check them out.
I would just like to say I've actually seen Donnie Darko and I liked it. I never see stuff that Brian recommends, so this is rare.
Yeah, this is
like one of two that I've seen. No, because I saw Maleficent.
Oh, yeah.
But and I mocked him for it. But
I've never seen this movie.
There's an evil man-sized bunny.
Yep. Why are you wearing that silly man suit?
Hey guys. You do it.
Hey guys.
Hey Jeremy.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well,
Maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Jare Dog.
It's Amanda. My turn.
Amanda.
Hello.
Oh, so, attracted by the dog pound.
I know. So it is the last week of March, so this is my final installment of March Weather Madness. I've saved my favoriteest type of weather book for the last one. Born and raised in the Midwest, I'm absolutely fascinated by tornadoes, and I thought I had read all of Nashville's tornado books, but I found one. And so I read it, and I saved it, and now I'm going to talk about it. So it's about Moore, Oklahoma. Moore is no stranger to storms. According to the Weather Channel, from 1890 to 2013, at least 156 tornadoes have hit the Oklahoma City metro area, which includes Moore on its southeast side. So 13 of these were violent tornadoes, which means they were rated an EF4 or EF5. And on May 20th, 2013, an EF5 monster with wind speeds above 210 miles per hour formed in the open Oklahoma countryside and took aim directly at Moore. In her recent book, The Mercy of the Sky, Moore native Holly Bailey, not to be confused with Halle Berry, Holly Bailey tells the story of this deadly storm. Bailey was a former White House correspondent. She now lives in New York City, but she said that she still watches the weather in Oklahoma because her family is still there, and she always calls her mom when there's a bad storm coming. So it seems like all Oklahomans are weather fanatics on some level. They'd have to be to continue to live in Tornado Alley's Alley.
Mm-hmm.
But even they knew that something was different on May 20th. The weather was predicted to get very bad. They had several days' notice, but everybody was just kind of waiting to see how bad it would actually get. Bailey's book does a good job mixing science and human interest. I especially like the coverage of the weather wars between renowned meteorologist Gary England, who I've mentioned before on the podcast, and his other rivals on other stations. The hardest part about this book was telling the story of the schools that were hit. Both Briarwood Elementary and Plaza Towers, where 7 children did not survive the storm. This part was very emotional, but Bailey handled it with a lot of honesty and finesse. And the fact that all these children did not survive was actually so intense that after 40 years of giving Oklahomans their weather, England actually announced his retirement from broadcast meteorology. He was just done. He didn't want to battle the weather anymore. So in the media, I think that the May 20th tornado kind of got overshadowed by the monster El Reno tornado that happened 11 days later that killed those three storm spotters and also tried to take out a Weather Channel crew. That tornado was actually the widest ever recorded at 2.6 miles in width. But I'm glad that Bailey got a chance to tell her story because of 24 deaths, seven of them being children. The Moore tornado really pulls at your heart. And the residents of Moore have since rebuilt their city again. But it's only a matter of time before Mother Nature comes knocking, and hopefully this time they will be ready.
Didn't it get hit again like a year or two after or something?
Something like that. I was out there last year.
Yeah, I mean, Moore's always on the radar. Yeah. I mean, like, they're kind of the hot spot of the hot spots.
Now,
so.
And also, correct me if I'm wrong, Tornado Alley, Texas, Oklahoma, sort of that area, that is a notoriously active tornado area. Yes. But isn't Dixie Alley actually more?
Yes. No, it's not. Well... It's not necessarily Moore. It's a different time of year. Like, early spring and, like, winter is Moore Dixie Alley, which is, like, Mississippi, Alabama. Yeah. Like, the Gulf Coast.
Okay.
And it tends to be that, like, the Moore EF4, EF5s happen in the Plains tornado.
It's like
they usually
have
more... EF2, 3. I mean, they'll get the big ones, but they're not as frequent.
I guess that's what it was. It's, like, it's more intense in the western because it's flat. And
it's just where the mountains and the Gulf air meet. That's just, like, perfect topography for bad storms.
And we're sort of, I guess, on, the distant edge of all that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we get all the Gulf moisture, so that's what gets all the fun going.
Editor's note. Great segue. No, really.
So, after the day that this post, the day after this post, March 31st, all the way to April 3rd, is the second annual Chattanooga Film Festival, oh boy. I'll be going down on April 1st to see one of my favorite dudes, Joe Bob Briggs, do a panel on redneck movies, y'all. There's going to be documentaries and horror movies and action movies and foreign films. It's basically everything I like except for sci-fi and comedies. Oh, good times. There's going to be panels on how to make movies and a four-hour dance party in a steamboat. If you're into that sort of thing, I'd rather watch more movies.
I bet that's your favorite part.
Talking to people, hearing live music. Yeah. Being on a boat.
Being trapped on a boat for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I'm on a boat.
No. Personally, I'm looking forward to dropping by a local eatery, Aretha Frankenstein's, and having another unholy waffle. Get the night muffin to Georgia or something. What have you got there?
All right. Well, see, music, as usual, is tickling my fancy. What else would there be? It's my stress reliever and motivator to clean. So there you go. So there are a couple of awesome bands I'd like to highlight. One I think most of you have heard of, but they recently released a new album that I'll get to hear live at the Ryman in May. Woohoo! The album Better Nature by Silver Sun Pickups is pretty good and a possible runner for Best Music of the Year. Just throwing that out there. Fun fact about the album, apparently it's the first album that the band included a song that's under 4 minutes long. Yeah, just let that set up. Somewhat shocking considering this is their fourth album.
Wow.
But the track in mention is a catchy tune as well. It's called Circadian Rhythm. And the second band isn't recently new, but new to me. So you all have probably heard of them already. They're out of California. The band In the Valley Below released the album The Belt in 2013. I guess they could be compared to Silver Sun Pickups, both in sound and that it's a combined male and female duo. Peaches, bringing it back to fruit, is the hit track.
That's right. We planted the seed, and now it's time for harvest.
This is the pits. Working on my feeling, breaking down the ceiling, digging up the deep end. Freezing on the beaches, reaching for the sweetest, sweetest beaches.
hit track, but the album is filled with several other awesome tunes, such as Dove Season and Neverminders. Where can you find these albums at the library? Check out Hoopla, of course.
Hoopla.
Jeremy.
Tickling my fancy this week. I think I've mentioned this on the thing before podcast. I got a lot of comic books in my life. I talk about them a lot. I have a problem buying them. I buy a lot of them, and they're in big boxes on my bedroom floor.
Which I'm sure your wife loves.
She doesn't spend time over there. So on that side of the bed.
So this is like a sitcom where you got taped,
pretty much.
The room in half. And,
half of it's painted blue, half of it's pink.
Yeah.
I can't open some of the drawers in my dresser without moving boxes of comic books. So one of the goals in my life is to actually read these Sons of Guns. So several years ago, I picked up many, many issues of this book called ROM Space Knight, which was based on a toy that was released and promptly flopped in the 1970s. It was just a stiff, kind of dumb-looking robot. And then Marvel made a comic book out of it. And it lasted for 75 issues from until 1986. And it sort of remained beloved in a lot of people's hearts. I had been buying some self-published comics from dudes off the internet, and there was all of these ROM tributes and stuff. And I was like, maybe someday I'll look into some of those because they're not reprinted anywhere because of licensing issues. And so one day at McKay, I found a gigantic run of them, and then spent a couple of years filling in the holes. And now I own all 75 issues and all four annuals. Brag.
I don't know if I can sit in the same room as this awesome dude.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's kind of a big deal. I'm about 30 issues into it.
You're a total romantic.
Yeah. I'm about 30 issues into it, and it is very cool. It's very much out of its, very much of its time, too. So, usually on the second or third page, there's a conversation between two or more characters or one character in thought bubbles where they recap the events of the previous couple of issues. It's like, if only I hadn't gone and fought the Hulk in that mine shaft in that town and saved those people. It's, very much getting you back up to speed.
I thought it was going to be of his time. They've got wide lapels and sideburns.
Well, there's a lot of that, too. There's quite a bit of that.
That's one groovy fight you had there, Wolverine.
That's, Luke Cage was in one of the issues.
All right, Jive Turkey.
I believe he said Sweet Christmas.
All right.
So it's pretty great. Rom is a noble fish out of water who's he's an alien. His humanity is encased in cyborg armor, and he fights aliens called Dire Wraiths, who kind of look like the old Captain Crunch villains, the Soggies. This book is the brainchild of Bill Mantlo, who was a prolific writer who worked on nearly every Marvel character throughout his career. He created Rocket Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy. And he has kind of a tragic story, too. He suffered a traumatic brain injury while rollerblading in 1992. He was hit and run, and he's been in, he had to live in, assisted living facility ever since. He doesn't write. He sort of can't think straight. So sort of a sad sort of end to his, he's still alive, but he's aware of stuff, but it's really a horrible story. And, he really, he wrote tons of stuff. And so it's sort of an interesting sort of darkness that kind of moves over. Yeah, sorry to bum it. Also,
never rollerblade.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
There's
a good joke.
Check. No problem there.
Also, this morning I heard that Fife Dog from A Tribe Called Quest died. R.I.P.
Yo, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? The 5-foot assassin with the roughneck business. I float like gravity, never had a cavity. Got more rhymes than the one that's got family. No need to sweat Arsenio to gain some type of fame. No shame in my game, cause I always be the same. Styles upon styles upon styles is what I have. You wanna just a fifer, but you still don't know the half. I sport new balance.
Right.
Well, thanks, man.
Bummer.
Artists die. Hair, make us happy.
Here, Brian. Yeah,
I'm like the wrong person.
I was going to say, that was your pick to make us happy. We're all
wrong. Life is
I'm
pain.
The wrong person.
What do you have?
You ready to feel? Yesterday, when I walked, when he came in, he goes, okay, you ready to feel the pain? Are you ready to feel the pain?
That's true. And then, of course, the pain was felt, right?
Oh, yeah. I feel the pain of everyone. All right. And then I feel nothing.
Hmm.
Wow.
It's a Dinosaur Jr.
You're like a sin eater?
That's a Dinosaur Jr.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The nature of the pain was he had to put the nonfiction book display back up. Yeah, right?
I had to do my job.
Whoa.
Terrible.
I don't believe
terrible
this.
Terrible pain. Unbearable.
The nightmare.
Unbearable pain. There's no medication for that.
It's true.
All right.
Tears, they flow. The policeman said.
Tickling my fancy is actually a video game.
What?
Nice.
What?
A video game.
What?
A video game. So the video
Miss Pac-Man involves fruit.
She has
and
a
next week I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna plug some obscure board game.
So the
I
game.
Know
of course.
Wait, wait.
You know who made it too?
The game that's tickling my fancy is Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
Came out. It's relatively recent. It's very new for video games that I typically play. And the gist is you are Amanda Ripley, Ellen Ripley's daughter of Alien franchise fame. It is set in that universe. And basically, you sort of are on a ship in deep space, you know, on a regular, like, mining scrap mission or whatever. But you're there because that was the last place that your mother, Ellen Ripley, was seen. But, of course, soon enough, you find yourself on an abandoned space station where things have clearly gone wrong, and maybe there's an alien on board this space station. This game is set sort of in the same era or time period or has the same vibe as the very first Alien movie, and it captures it perfectly. It is so cool and good, and also it is scary as heck. So I play video games on the laptop that I outsource other people to edit the podcast on. And I often play this game at night in bed with headphones, you know, and, like, it's totally dark so that I can only see the screen. I have headphones on, and it's totally immersive. And, like, at certain points, it is so scary that it is, like, not fun to play.
And, so I'm not going anywhere near this thing.
Awesome.
It's so scary. So, I've only gotten about an hour in before I was like, I'm done with this. An alien hasn't even appeared yet, and I'm all like,
Okay, so that's good, right? Because, you know, I've seen a ton of, like, horror movies. Within the last 5 years, I've gone from not enjoying horror movies because they're scary to, like, horror movies are meaningless. So,
yeah.
But this game still scares the crap out of me, and I think if you're in a controlled environment, the sound design is just amazing, and it's won some awards for its sound design. But now that I've gotten farther in the game, eventually you do meet other humans on the space station, and they're like animated video game humans. But this is like a high-end game with really good graphics, but it just so totally becomes like more of a video game, and then there's some sequences where you have to, like, try to, like, fight or kill or get away from the other humans, and it just kind of becomes like Metal Gear or something, and that's not as interesting to me. The parts when it is the absolute scariest is when you're on the station alone and you don't know where the alien is, and there's awesome sound design and it's dark. You can kind of see and kind of not see. Just so perfect and scary.
Yeah, this is much like the first movie. So, like, you know, a previous Alien games were more like the second movie. So it's all about shooting a bunch of them and, like, hoorah, Marines and all that kind of stuff. And this one, it's more like the first one where there's one alien. It's unstoppable. You have to get away from it. You can't fight it.
Huh.
That kind of thing.
Run away.
So, yeah.
She had a daughter in the movie.
In Aliens, they mentioned she has a daughter.
Yeah. I think in, like, the extended director's cut, she goes and, like, visits the daughter, like, looks her up.
And, like, she's in her 80s or something.
Yeah, she's like an old lady or something, yeah.
I have to admit something, because this is a little bit related to what you're talking about.
I know you're a huge Aliens fan.
So, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about Galaxy Quest. You said it starred Ripley from Ghostbusters.
Yes. I did that on purpose. Yes.
Well, I was sitting there, and I was like, there's nobody named Ripley in Ghostbusters. And so then some came up, and I was like, they were saying Ripley
in
was
Ghostbusters,
an alien.
Her name,
like,
is Dana.
Oh! It took me, like, literally, like, a week to get your joke.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
But I got there.
That's awesome.
So, believe it or not.
Just admit that right now.
She could not hear the Ripley.
So I not only remembered it, but I figured it out.
That's awesome. So, it was on a timer.
Callback.
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's awesome.
So speaking of the original Ellen Ripley.
There is no Ripley, only Zool.
Speaking of the original Ellen Ripley, played by Sigourney Weaver, there is a downloadable content pack where you can play the game as Ellen Ripley and all the original characters Alien 1, Dallas.
Yeah, they got all the original actors, too.
Yeah, so it's pretty darn cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Alien Isolation, if you want to be so scared that it's not even any fun, it's a game I recommend.
All
right.
I just gotta throw this in here, too. I'm playing it on Linux laptop, which a few years ago wouldn't have been possible. The super high-end game with, like, really intensive graphics. Works on Linux perfectly. It's amazing. Corrections! Who has corrections?
I do.
A few.
I don't want to drag us down.
Shoot it.
I don't want us to
do it.
I don't want to drag us down too much. But we were talking about the rules of the internet. Rule 34 is the if it exists, then there's porn of it. I think you said 43, and I might have said 42.
Oh, that's an important thing.
It's rule 34. Yeah. And also, I looked up Dee Barton did the music for Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he did the music that was in that trailer from two episodes ago, but. But that's who did the soundtrack, and I couldn't find the soundtrack anywhere. But.
I found out that the soundtrack was never released as a long form album.
Yeah.
That little sort of like bass riff that was in the trailer, mm-hmm. it according to Shazam, it might be a track by Herbie Flowers, who is a bass player and a session musician right during that time period, who played on a lot of classic albums and wrote songs and hooks for other people. So
cool.
Maybe it's Herbie Flowers. Maybe it was Dee Barton.
Dee Barton played, I think, played a horn like with Stan Kenton and some people. So he was like a jazz musician too. So awesome.
I was going to say that Superman's chip lands in Smallville, not Metropolis. Oh, nerd fail.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh, a nerd fail for us for
notice.
Not catching it. We're both fired. Boo. All of us are fired.
I said alternate histories, not internet histories. I don't know. It didn't sound right to me. And I was listening to it later. And then I wish I'd talked to Jeremy about the whole, like, you know, DC was intended for children and Marvel was intended for teenagers, because that does seem to be like a big distinction, at least to me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Future podcast episode.
Yeah, we could go off on another digression at some point. Off pod.
Something to look forward to.
By only the two of us.
All right. Some little addendums, clarifications. Metal Machine Music was recorded in 1975. Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson didn't actually get married until 2008, though they were New York City art power couple through most of the 90s. The board game artist Terry Leeds that I talked about, I found out that his day job is the art director of the San Diego Air and Space Museum. Which is on the axis.
How do you get that job? That's a cool job.
Yeah, on the axis of sort of like art and geekdom, amazing. Scores very high, right?
Yeah.
The song at the very end was Small Town from Songs for Drella, which I talked about but didn't put a clip in. All right, for more information about Andy Warhol and rock and roll stars who fight with each other, you can go to www.library.nashville.org. And our theme music is by
Adam Bean.
You can subscribe to the Popmatic podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and
Arsus.
Razzmatazz.
Next week,
Poetry
to a flower I found on a summer morn.
Oh, man.
Thou reminds me of yonder podcast.
Here I sit, broken hearted.
Get reverse. We'll be right back. But then that didn't come, like, when I went back and listened, I was like, oh, well, that didn't really come across what I was trying to say. So that got cut out. And then at one point, I think I said to Jeremy, I was like, that toilet, actually, literally a toilet flush, I think.
Right in the middle of somebody's.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, now that the toilet's flushed, I was like, Jeremy, it's you.
Yeah,
Jeremy.
Exactly.
So, like, that was like, I was like, okay. That's
you couldn't hear it on the podcast. Like, I was listening for the toilet flush. And then you cut that part out.
I was like, okay, cut that. And
good times.
And
good times.
I did the times. I talked for 10 minutes.
Yes.
Karma.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All
right. Wow.
Yeah, glorious.
Justice. I feel like yes. I feel justice for me.
You guys need to cut those words down.
And now we're 15 minutes behind. All right.
Oh, man.
That's pretty standard.
All right. Now it's time. Whose house?
Oh, I kept waiting for that.
I forgot you guys do.
We're never going to let you forget.
I forgot you guys do.
Even what episode,
me,
like.
That makes me want to be in that fraternity.
I know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. I walk past
that, say that
every day when I was in UK. And I was like, farmhouse? That's a weird day for fraternity. But if I had known that I could have gone, like.
Yeah, little did you
whose
know.
Whose house is this? Good. Farmhouse!
Put their flag.
I would have joined.
They put their flag
so
at half staff when Dale Earnhardt died. It was,
are you kidding me?
Oh, no, I swear. I swear to you. And then I remember on 9/11, I looked outside and was like, those bastards better put their flag down.
I mumbled it. I was correcting myself.
Oh, I thought you were emphasizing.
Yeah,
it.
You're wanting a response.
Yeah.
No. I was like, mango. Oh, did I do it right?
Mango to college. Mango to college. That's what all my fans are.
Mango to college.
Is it mango to college?
All right.
Are you doing
this on purpose?
On purpose?
Yeah, it's just like Popeye or something.
Do I have to go back and read all of it?
Magication.
I like hallucinations.
It's a figmentation of imagination.
No, I have to say it right. I hate you guys.
We need a better scene.
Say it wrong.
He's having hallucinations.
Hallucinations? You're combining hallucinogens and hallucinations.
I don't remember college.
Yeah. It was a rough ride for you, wasn't it?
No, it was actually a lot of fun. Okay.